And welcome back to Talking of Books. We're doing all things cooking today on Talking of Books. We're leading up to the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature, and we have a very strong author cook strand this year. So we've just finished up with Nadia's Kitchen and Bake Me a Story, and we're moving along now to another very well-known sort of chef come author, Sabrina Gale. She's written two delightful books. I have read Persiana. In the studio with me, I've got Julie. Julie, you've read Cicero, I think it is.
Yes, Sirocco.
And Shamila, which one have you had a look through?
Sirocco.
Sirocco as well. Yeah. Okay, so it's John and I who've done Persiana, and Sirocco is the one that the two of you have done. Now, that is the more recent one, isn't
book,
it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think we can go straight into Sirocco, seeing as that the majority of you have read that. Julie, tell me a little bit about it.
I really enjoyed this cookery book, and I have to say that Chrissy, who gave me the book to have a look at, was inspired, and she always is inspired, I have to say. You know, my husband's work is eating and drinking, that's what he does for a living, and so cookery books are very strong in our house, extremely strong. So basically, Sirocco is actually Italian, and again an inspired title, and it's where a gentle breeze from the east meets the west, and I think that really encompasses this book beautifully, because apart from many things, it's very user-friendly, and it's a real fusion of recipes. So, but she herself is a very, very interesting lady in that it's only 3 years ago that she had her first book published. And I heard Isabel at the Literary Lunch this week, and she was talking about fairy tale stories and Nadia, for example. And this really is a fairy tale story in that she was listening to a radio program and seeing that a very famous chef, Tom Keller, was advertising a pop-up supper party, and it was £250 a head. And
that That's a lot.
Well, it is, and Tom Keller's from the French Laundry. So she got on Twitter and said, "It just really in jest, how about we have a French laundrette as opposed to laundry supper at my house, and it will be £2.50 a head." And with that, the phones went crazy. She got 80 people to come, and they raised £4,000 for action against hunger, which was wonderful, and that's where it started. So
So she had the same reaction that I had when you said it was £250.
Yes, yeah, but and then she's just gone from strength to strength. So it's really interesting, the book. It's beautifully illustrated, and the recipes are very, very user-friendly. And I brought some cookies in this morning that I baked.
Yes, I can smell them.
From the book. So I thought we could taste them. And also over the weekend with my children, with my two of my three daughters, because my youngest daughter's back in the UK with her daddy, as he's gone eating at restaurants in London for work.
We're not going to talk to him.
No. Well, so I also practiced a few. So, for example, I did the salmon recipe, which I also had a very special friend over and really, really enjoyed eating that. We all did. And then I also did a chicken recipe, which again, it's just comfort food, but you can throw it together really quickly. So that's my take on the book so far.
Now, while we were going through the book, I was going through Persiana, but I'm pretty sure that the same will go through for Sirocco, is that for me, a cookery book it rises and falls on its index. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't have a good index, I'm going to lose patience with it. Because you want to be able to cross-reference. If I happen to have a chook in my fridge, I want to go and look up chicken. I don't want to go and look up curry. Mm. If I feel like a curry, I want to look up curry, and I want to be able to find out that there's a chicken curry. Mm. So to me, a really good cookery book has a strong index, and this one, certainly the one that I was looking at, does. So does Sirocco have a good index?
Yes, it does. It does have a very good one.
Yeah. You need the crossover.
I had that frustration recently. Is I was looking to do something different with a duck. And I look up duck, nothing, and eventually, oh, try poultry. Bingo. So, yes, there's a logic there, but surely the cross-reference or something.
Cross-reference, it just makes it so much easier. Really, it does. And for somebody who's somebody in the kitchen, you know, you sit down, you've got your cookery books in front of you, you pick them up, I go to the index first to find out what options I have. Because, and often it's to do with ingredients, because you're at home already. What am I going to cook? I would like to cook this. So you go and you look at the ingredients. I've got a ton of lemons at the moment. What can I cook with lemons? I want to go look up lemons. I don't want to go and look up Moroccan chicken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So for me, it's really important. More takes on Sirocco? The covers, I love the cover.
Yes.
Is there lead me. Tell me what that's all about. Do we know?
Well, do you want to I like the cover, and there's two covers, there's two versions. But I would have preferred to see some food on the cover. So I do like it, and I love the colours, because the colours are very evocative of all that we aspire to the Middle East and to food and flavours. So I do like it, but I still think I would have preferred some food on the picture.
And the other cover, does that have food on it?
It does. Yes, it does. But I think it's really interesting what you were saying about the index. And I think part of that goes right back to what kind of learners we are, whether we are a visionary learner, visual or auditory. And just if we're looking at food and how the pictures are changing.
That's so important in a book as well, isn't it?
It's very important. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we see so much taste in what we see. So we really eat our food in what we see, and that's very much part of the senses. So, and we're actually using a part of the brain to bring all those together. So food, what we're looking at visually, is very, very important. But whilst I was looking, something that I found really interesting, and possibly a little bit extreme, but they were saying...
I just have to ask you to open the book more so I can see the pages. Okay. I'm looking over your shoulder. Yeah.
But what there's quite a few studies at the minute, and they're saying that the world of cookery and the photography is so perfect that it's actually causing an increase in obesity and lack of self-regulation.
Oh, wow.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, they're saying that where all these pictures, which are, the photography is so beautiful, and in this book it is particularly,
it's beautiful.
The colours are
lovely,
very beautiful.
Lovely. In fact, Julie, char-grilled courgettes. I had this page open when my daughter walked into the room, and the first thing she said is, oh, that looks delicious. And I was like, it's courgette, you don't eat that. And she said, oh, I'll eat that if you make it. So, I mean, if that's a response to go by.
Yeah.
And all the photos in the book are like that. I mean, you just look at it and you want to eat it. And I can understand, I mean, people looking at cookery books and then you reach out for whatever's in the pantry or, you know, on the in the tins at home.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't do anything about it after that, yes.
Do you know what I've noticed over the years, and this, I don't know if we can transfer it to our homes as well, and why we're eating more than we have done in the past, say, is that I can remember a time when, first of all, most restaurants weren't open for breakfast, and a restaurant opened an hour, you know, like an hour, but 12 o'clock would be an opening time for a restaurant, and then the lunchtime session would close. The restaurant would actually close and you would leave. Nowadays, you can go to a restaurant at any time of the day, and you can start a meal at any time of the day. You can have breakfast at 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
You can have lunch at 8. You know, some restaurants do change it up a bit, but you have people eating all day long. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the discipline of having your meals at meal times, there's something to be said for that as well.
Yes.
And sitting down with the family at a certain time and having a meal, asking if you can leave the table, for example, and, you know, just those little old-fashioned traditions that begin and end a meal.
Yes.
But that's what I think is one of the strengths of this book, in that, excuse me, in that there isn't, there's quite a few recipes where there isn't a whole list of ingredients. And a lot of the ingredients are that you have in your cupboard. But one of the things that I really love is that she absolutely encourages you to interchange. So don't be frightened. If you haven't got something, try something else. And she really actively encourages
absolutely,
you to do that.
As she says, if you're missing an ingredient, don't stress. Just leave it out. Yeah. It's the line every good cookbook should have.
But for the purposes, for the purposes of the test kitchen that we seem to have had running in the show today, Julie, did you leave out, I mean, did you follow the recipe to a T because it was going to, you were going to be bringing those cookies in, or did you cheat?
I never follow a recipe to a T.
Okay.
I never.
The two of us.
Is that because of your... Okay, so for the purposes of... because we've got to taste your cookies, right? So for the purposes of the discussion that we're having now, we are reviewing a cookery book.
Yes.
So what did you change in your recipe?
Well, like, for example, the cookies I brought in this morning, she said to use dark chocolate. Now, my girls love the dark chocolate with orange. So I was going to use that. I have another daughter, Tara, for example, who can't, she's allergic to nuts. So, you know, there's got to be a different batch where I don't have pistachio in for her. Yeah. So, but she really makes it not an issue. Listen, if you can't do this, it's fine. Whereas with a lot of cookery books, you do get bogged down with you must do it like this and you must do it like that, and it's like Nigella Lawson was saying, you know, it is a marriage of cultures.
Absolutely.
But it's, she was also saying it just gets everybody into the kitchen very easily.
Julie, I hope we'll be doing another test run on your productions over the break, but it's time to take a break first of this hour. But stay tuned, we'll be back on more cooking and more of what's in store at Litfest.
From Agatha Christie to Jeffrey Archer, we've got it covered. Talking of books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. You're joined in the studio by Penny McKenzie, John MacDonald. We've got Esther at the desk. And we've got the lovely Jenny Mallon. We've got lovely Tika. Julie, I'm sorry. And we've got Shamila in the studio with us. I want to just quickly give you a whet your appetite a little bit for the actual festival. If you're interested in what we've been talking about so far, I can give you some information for Sabrina Gayor Sessions. She's doing a really interesting supper club discussion. And she's doing the supper club discussion with Peter Frankopan, who we will talk about his book just now. And their session is called Spices on the Silk Roads, a Supper Club Discussion. And that is on Wednesday, the 8th of March at 7 p.m. I suspect that this will be absolutely amazing. If you haven't come across Peter Frankopan, he is, I would say, a Renaissance man. He is an academic. He is an author of a very, very readable book, The Silk Roads. He is also a sportsman. He's also a businessman. He's a family man. I mean, he's just everything all rolled into one. So any dinner with him is going to be very interesting, and it'll be a wonderful cultural exchange with Sabrina Gayor talking about her book, Sirocco, with him. That will be one to look out for. That'll be a dinner worth going to, for sure. She's also involved in a session called What's Cooking? The Business of Food. That is with Justine Cantor. So if you are looking at something that's going to tell you a little bit more about cooking and chefing and getting into the business, that will be the session for you. So Sabrina Gayor is actually a self-taught chef and cookbook author. She left an events business to run a supper club, and you told us a very little interesting story about that, you know, the whole business of the £250 versus the £2, which I think is a great way to kickstart something going. And then, you know, a lot of people would do the event, and then they walk away from it. That would be it. But so it takes a little bit of nous and a bit of pizzazz to take it further. John, you've read Sirocco, haven't you?
No, I'm not familiar with Sirocco or Persiana.
Oh, okay. So you're out on a limb on those ones. Did you enjoy your cookie that we've just been munching on?
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah. And that is out of Sirocco. And and as you say, you tried out the chicken and you tried out the salmon. So recommend the book?
Yes, I would thoroughly recommend the book. And as I say, it's all about taking ingredients and involving your family, which I know has been very much what we've talked about this morning. But for me, with our three daughters, I think eating together as a family is one of the most greatest pleasures we have and creates the most wonderful memories. And when we talk about, you know, things that of the past, the girls will say, oh, do you remember that meal? And do you remember that meal? And but it's always about sitting around the table. And I think this book makes family eating very easy.
Absolutely. So we do tend to do the same thing because, you know, during the week, everybody is so busy with work.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, we try to have at least one meal where we all sit around and chat. And then we talk about that conversation and the food we ate for a couple of months after.
Yeah.
So it really, and this book definitely makes you want to do that. I mean, the kind of recipes that are there and the kind of environment it creates, it really is a great book for that.
And I think just going back to looking at the index and going back to whether we are visionary learners or auditory learners, I think that some of that is now taking us because of the internet where, and just our lives, everything is so instant.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
We want to know a recipe for lemon chicken, you press lemon and it comes up. And
I'm so grateful. I really
No. I think we lose out on certain steps which doesn't allow our mind to explore. But on the other hand, with this cookery book, it's about getting the family together. It really is. And, you know, it's something you can do in the evening when you come in and you're tired. Few things and it works. It does work.
And again, simplicity of recipes, complication of ingredients, length of time. Have we got a good mix on that? Is it quick, easy recipes? Is it...
She's quite precise about it, yes.
Yeah,
and she also tells you that you can prep in the morning before you leave for work and then you come back and you have half an hour to get the meal ready. And I thought that was very good for, since most people are working.
Yeah, and that was very helpful.
And I thought that was an interesting tip, you know, because that's one of the things which deter people from going into the kitchen is this entire image of you slaving over endless ingredients and the chopping and the cutting. And that's the first thing my daughters say, oh my God, if there's a mountain of chopping and cutting, Mom, you better do it. We'll just eat. So that's a really good thing. But I think what really recommended the book was the length of the recipes. They were just, most of them were so short and sweet.
Really helpful.
And I love cooking, but I want a small recipe. I don't want to wait through two pages of ingredients.
Tested, right. If you haven't got the ingredient, leave it out.
Oh,
but
that.
Couldn't that be disastrous?
Well, John,
crucial ingredient.
If you're supposed to be cooking salmon and you use chicken, I think that might be a problem.
Perhaps. Oh, well, I haven't got any salmon.
But
chicken,
you know, not even. No.
But sometimes even those recipe, lend themselves. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. The salmon recipe that I cooked on Thursday night, that recipe could equally have been used with chicken. So it's just about being adventurous and, you know.
Yeah, exactly that. So, for example, my house guest came and gave my son a mango and something else, sort of sauce that she'd picked up and brought with. And so he was looking at it. So he has nothing except what he's been given, which is mango and coriander in a sauce. So he's sitting there thinking, ooh, what can I use? And he said salmon. And so she said, no, I don't think salmon. He said, no, I think salmon would be. So there was a discussion that started taking place. Could we do it with salmon? Yes, I suppose we could. And what else? Maybe some prawns, maybe some chicken. Mm-hmm. So they had a whole, and I think, that whole, it becomes a part of something bigger than just the meal that you're cooking. But that can't happen every single day. You also need the practical, here's dinner. This is what it is today. I mean, it's nice it's a lovely idea to have that stopping point every day where you spend time with your family. And I think it's more important, obviously, when you've got small children. But as you get older, everybody has a different life and you get quite busy. Then it's much, much harder to do.
It's much harder, but I still feel that it's, as you've pointed out, it's definitely worth the effort. And it's just about not being fearful, not being fearful. And I also think that her story, if you know her story when you read the book, it almost gives you the courage. Well, if she can do it, I can maybe. Not in, you know,
but
in a
lovely
kind of,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Because 3 years ago, she had her book, first book, and she was awarded the best newcomer by The Observer in 2014. She won that. She's won so many awards. But I also think what's very interesting, and we need to get this with our families. I work with lots of young children, which is just the best job in the world. But she actually started when she was six. Her first memory is stirring, and I certainly remember it, cod mornay in a plastic bag in a pan of water. And that was her first memory when she was 6 years old. Her mother apparently was a terrible cook, and she was quite clear, "Mummy, you can't." And she lived with her mother and her grandmother. And, you know, food was such an important part of her growing up. And that's, we need to do this with our children. We've got to find the time. We've got to get them into the kitchen, like you were saying before. I was saying, listening to you a little bit, and you were saying, you know, the kitchen's a dangerous place and you wouldn't do it without your children. We are becoming so risk averse. Come on, get your children into the kitchen.
And more importantly, what I discovered is that when I tried to get my children in the kitchen when they were very young, it was very hard. They didn't want to be there. I forced them to be there because I was blown if I was going to be the only person in the kitchen. So I had them there, bitter and twisted, while they helped me chop things most of the time. But it's paid off in the long run.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, when we come together as a family, you know, like Eleanor's in England and Melissa and Tara are now here, but when they all go off different places and when we all come back together at Christmas and holidays, we get together and it's in the kitchen. You know, we went out to a friend's who joined us last Thursday. Actually, we went to her place for dinner, and one of the greatest parts of the evening was in the kitchen and the food, and it's
yeah, we all end up in the kitchen somehow. So it's a warm place,
except that in the Mohan household I'm at the stove, the other three are at the table and they're chatting with me.
Well,
that's because I took up cooking. I'm self-taught, as all most of us, and I took up cooking very, very late in life because my mother believed that you didn't really have to cook. She was enough for all of us. So I was not really allowed into the kitchen very often.
Yeah, I think that's what happens with most of us, and then we realize what you've missed out on. When you really have to cook, you have to cook. You can't go hungry. So that's one skill you need to know.
But it does make me wonder, though, about where the cookery books are going, because again I was cooking with
Julie, we'll keep that wonder for a couple of minutes. Another break is upon us, so stay tuned and we'll hear exactly what Julie is wondering, especially after this.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
Talking of books. And Julie, just before the break, I was wondering where cookery books were going, I think we're about to say.
Yes, and because now everything's online and we can just press for a recipe, but there's nothing quite like getting hold of the physical book and looking, and that's why the illustrations are so important. And do you know where the term was coined from, a feast to the eyes? Do you know where that comes from and how long ago it is?
We're hoping you're going to tell us.
I think we are going to be told.
Yes.
Yeah. It's from Apicus, who was the first century Roman gourmand.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
He actually said, we eat with our eyes.
Mm.
Now, I think that in the world, you know, 2017, where we think we are so advanced and so sophisticated, then you've got, from the first century, purportedly, Aris saying that we eat with our eyes. And that gives me hope that the cookery book isn't lost. But also something else that Eleanor, my youngest, was saying, she was doing something online and it didn't quite work, and she said, do you know, it's much better going from a cookery book, Mummy, because you just feel more confident when you know the source of the author, for example.
So very good point.
And that's with, you know, a 21 year old, so it's not generational particularly.
No,
that they respect.
But you're very right,
the
you're
book
very
and the work
right
that's
yes
gone into
yes
it. So
yes.
Yeah, so hopefully.
And I do think if you are a frequent cooker, that's the right word, for pleasure, because I mean, I'm not going to pretend I really don't enjoy cooking every day. I adore cooking special meals for events, and I love researching, and I love choosing recipes, and I love trying them out. And I have my stock favourite favorites that I keep going back to. I also have, and I'm sure some of you have, collections of recipes that have been handwritten, because we don't do that as much as we used to. But I've got, when I got married, I got a little book from somebody, and I've written all my mom's favorite recipes and my great aunts and my grandmothers, and I go back to those. And what I've actually also done, and shoot me down now if you need to, but I like writing in my cookery books.
Oh no, I do too. I do too.
I've written the dates of when I've done things for the first time. I've written down the changes that I've made. I've written the differences between my own recipes, which I've family recipes, and the ones that I've found in books, and which ones I've preferred. And I've made all these notes, and there's splodges all over them, and I will never get rid of the most stained of my recipe books.
No. Even you can see in this cookery book at the minute, which is brand new, and yet there's, I've got food splashes over them. But I don't know, again, it just reminds me of, okay. But also, when my girls went off to uni, I did the exact same, whereas I had a folder and I handwrote their favourite recipes, and I also got them into the kitchen to make sure that they could cook quite a lot of them in preparation for when they went off to uni. So I think it's so multi-layered, the importance of cooking. And
one of my
books.
First cookery guides was by Marguerite Patton.
Oh, yes.
And it came, they were index about the size of a postcard and in a plastic shoebox with the indexes and whatever the various things were. And you pulled out the card and had the picture on one side of what it's supposed to look like, and the reverse you got the ingredients and the how-to. But they were laminated. You could have this in the kitchen, and if they got splashed or being laminated, a quick wipe, clean, and back in the...
Which is
in
the
really plastic
practical.
Shoebox again. And it was just so handy, and I've never seen anything like it since.
That's probably due to, again, the digital world that we live in and expense. I just think things have shifted, but thankfully not that much that our children can't appreciate what a book can give you, as opposed to just always going to the internet. So I think that's very positive, really positive.
Well, my Christmas was made by my son asking me for two specific cookery books, which I was so thrilled about. And I went off and hunted high and low till I found them and I gave them to him. I mean, that really did make my day. The fact that all those years of forcing him into the kitchen actually was worthwhile. Now, what we haven't spoken about is Persiana, also by Sabrina Gaynor, her first book. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's two of us here who've read that. So, Shamila, what are you?
I haven't read Persiana.
Oh, no, just me.
I think it's just you. Yes, I've got Sirocco, which I'm holding on to.
So Persiana is her first book. It's absolutely delightful. I will always talk about the cover because I like to do that. It's tactile. It's raised and embossed slightly, and it's beautiful and bright and spicy. I can feel pomegranates and all sorts of things just looking at it. So that was great. I love the way that everything's presented. Very similar to the book that you guys have been speaking about, Sirocco. There's a lovely illustration. There's the recipe to match it. That, as you say, your visual feast is totally involved in it. With my experience with this one is that the index is well thought out. It's cross-referenced in a way that makes it appealing and easy to use. The recipes are easy to follow. I found that the rice pudding that we've just tasted now, I like the taste of it. I would have possibly wanted it to be a little bit less sticky, but that's probably my friend's cooking rather than the recipe itself. Wonderful.
I hope she's
mix.
Not listening.
No, I'm presuming she's on a plane by now. I'm absolutely fine.
It is delicious, I have to say. It's wonderful.
I think we've had a good tasting of food today.
Yes, it's been fun.
I think her first book, though, is more serious than the second one.
More serious?
More serious.
What does that mean?
In that there's a greater complexity within the recipes than we have in her second book. And that's not to say that the second book is less complex particularly, but I just think there's a much greater broader span of recipes than in this one.
Do you not think that that's also because of her background? Because this is a book that comes out of her own family history, if you like.
Yes,
this is what she is, you know.
Yeah.
Persiana is her background. It is what she's all about. It's something that she understands and relates to. So you'd find that she probably has an intrinsic knowledge just from growing up at the side of her mother and her grandmother and their recipes and then researching. I would think that that's probably a great deal to do, yes, but tried them, yes, tried and tested. The recipes are absolutely lovely. They're, the main thing for me is that they just aren't too difficult. I mean, there's a couple of, there's more ingredients than I would like to put in, but you can see why. And we've had these foods when you've gone out to restaurants, and so you know why they've got all the ingredients in. And like you say, she says, don't use them all. You know, if you don't have to, don't use them. I like the way it's sectioned off. I would recommend it to anyone. I think that her sessions will definitely be interesting and worth listening to. So I think people should go along. And
yeah, I mean, I've listened to her in a couple of interviews, and she is very bouncy, very listenable, and yes, very enthusiastic. So yeah, I think she will be a good person to go and watch in the sessions.
Yeah, and I think that if you are a cook, an author cook, you kind of have to be somebody who can engage with the public. You know, you're not, because everything that you do is going, when you're feeding people, you are engaging. It's not as though you could be an author that's sort of hidden away in a dark corner, writing away and feeling angsty for hours and hours and hours, and then come out with your eyes, you know, blurry and slightly nervous of meeting people, because it's an engaging thing. Cooking is engaging. It's something that happens. It's community. It involves a lot of people usually.
Yeah, I think, Penny, I definitely agree with you, because I find myself doing that sometimes when we have guests over and, you know, I've made something which is not normally served. And they ask me, and then I really go into it, and then the family are literally pushing me out of the door, like, it's enough, it's enough, we don't really want to know anymore. But yeah, I'm so excited because it's something new, and I've tried it, and it's come out well, and, you know, yeah, I can see people appreciating
it. I think there's a lot of, Sharmila, I think there's a lot of creativity involved in cooking, and you really are like an artist working with colors. It's the same thing, and when you make something different, and you've tried something new, you want people to like it, you want feedback, you want to tell them about it. It's really,
and you love having people at the table who react positively, definitely. But even if somebody says, you know, I didn't quite like it, then you store that away and say, okay, maybe next time I'll tone it down, or I'll leave it out altogether. I mean, I suppose one would label me an instinctive cook, because I just throw things together and then hope that they'll turn out. And like John was saying earlier this in the program, that we can never reproduce the same thing twice, because you've forgotten what you put in. So my family has now instructed me. So I actually write down what recipe which has been approved or which they've enjoyed. I literally, Penny, take a pen and a diary, and I'm noting them down so that I remember exactly what I put in.
Do you know what? Apart from anything else, I love looking at recipes that have been written in my grandmother's hand. You know, both of my grandmothers have passed away, and so for me, it just reminds me of them, seeing their handwriting. But my Greek grandmother is kind of complicated, because everything's in Greek, so I have to go word by word and I have to translate it, and most of it involves me going to the dictionary, because my Greek is shocking. But it's so important, and then just remembering little stories about families within that. So everybody must write down their recipes.
Yes, really, I agree with you. My mum has left a whole lot of handwritten recipes, some which were copied from, you know, magazines and things. And she's got an entire notebook full of recipes which she's written in French.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, okay, now I'll have to relearn French so I can go through her book. But it's so much fun, and it just brings you so much closer to the person, especially if they're not around, you know.
I do think, living here in Dubai, we are very, very spoilt. And spoilt can have, you know, negative connotations too, because we have got all these restaurants that we can go out to, and we have got all these deliveries, and sometimes it makes us lazy, and I think we need to get beyond that, because it's so important that we, you know, our children know what they're eating and how it's been cooked, and so, you know, eating is, we can't live without food. So I don't think it's a coincidence that our brain is so near our mouth and our eyes. I also think it's quite interesting about in our anatomy how our tummy is being fed to our brain, that's keeping us safe. The message. So I all these things matter, but I do think we need to get back into the kitchen and use books like this to get us back into the kitchen.
Yeah, I think we're all agreed on that one. I think even John, you're going to try out some of these recipes, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
I love
new cookbooks and new recipes and doing something different and adventurous.
Can I just give people a little bit of a reminder, because I didn't mention earlier the sessions for Nadia Hussein. So if you want to book a session with Nadia Hussain at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature that takes place between the 3rd and the 11th of March. That's over the two weekends. More time for you to see more shows, because we've had, over the years, one of the chief sort of complaints that we've had, if we could call it that, is that people have to choose between two sessions that they want to attend. So what we've tried to do is spread it out over two weekends so that you're not quite as angst-ridden about the things that you have to choose between, although I can't guarantee that you still won't have a bit of a problem on that front, because we still have a very full program. Yeah. So we've tried to make it easier for you to see everybody, but we can't guarantee it. You might still have a clash. But Nadia Hussain has got a couple of sessions, three sessions with us. The first that I'm going to mention is Nadia's Bake Me a Story, The Gingerbread Guy. That is a children's session. Mm. Obviously, we're not stopping adults from coming, but the idea is that this is targeted at children. So do come along, bring your children along. That is on the 3rd of March, Friday the 3rd of March. It's event number 2, from at 11:30 to 12:30. Book. Come along and enjoy it. That's sort of appropriate for ages 4 and up. These are not age restrictions. These are guidelines. So, use, don't use as you see fit. The next session I'd like to mention is Secret Lives and Summer Love, Contemporary Women's Fiction. So this is where we see Nadia partnering up with April Hardy, who we had on the show last week, and Sue Moorcroft. And they're going to be talking about contemporary fiction, confronting serious issues with humour. Mm. I think that we'll find that also terribly interesting. So that's April Hardy, Nadia Hussain, and Sue Moorcroft. That is on the 3rd of March at 4:30. Again, that is taking place, I think the 3rd of March is our first weekend.
Yes.
Get in, log on to emiratslitfest.com and book your ticket for that. And then the big event with Nadia is the Great British Afternoon Tea, which are going to sell like hotcakes, if I may say. So get those quickly, because if you don't, those will be sold out. So that's on Saturday, the 4th of March at 2:30. So remember, she baked a cake for the Queen. And we will come back to talking of books after a break with more things foodie.
From Shakespeare to Tolstoy, Stephen King to Danielle Steele, this is Talking of Books.
In association with the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature.
On Dubai Eye 103.8. Now, back to the team.
And welcome back to Talking of Books. And we're in a bit of a mouth-watering show today. if you're listening, certainly, cooking and author cookery authors and cookery-related authors appearing at the Emirates International Festival of Literature in just a little more than a month now. And we've been Nadia Hussain, so well known from her television appearances in the UK, Nadia's Kitchen, The Amir Sisters, Bake Me a Story, and just before the break we're looking at Sirocco and Persiana. And Persiana now triggers our next quiz question. And Persiana, things that come from Persia. What is the modern name for Persia, the country that used to be called Persia? What do we call it now? So text us at 4001 and two tickets to the author session that relevant to Persia and Sirocco could well be yours. Earlier we'd asked about Nadia Hussain. What did she do on television that brought her to such prominence? Was the television show about dancing? Was it singing? Or was it baking? Again, text 4001 and tickets to one of Nadia's Litfest sessions.
Such hard questions, John.
Absolutely. We are so generous. It must be these Julie's cookies from... they were Sirocco recipe, were they, Julie?
Yes.
And Penny. But what was that jar of rice pudding type of thing?
That type of thing. That was from Persiana, so that was a rice pudding from Persiana. Mm,
very good it was, too.
A nice traditional one, and I can say that it's quite similar to the recipe that my grandmother had, so that the Greek and the Persian are quite similar in this respect.
Mm. 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 Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is also quite interesting, because a couple of her recipes in Sirocco are from a very good friend of hers whose grandmother was Greek. And she was saying when she would go over to Greece in the holidays, and she you know, she'd be in the kitchen with the grandmother. So there's the same here in these books.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. Okay, well, I can see that makes sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All these little tie-ins that we get. Again, stories, food, bringing people together. If you think about the stories, not stories, but recipe books from sort of the days gone by, if you think about The Joy of Cooking, for example, not a picture in sight. But I learned some very good technical bits and pieces from those kinds of cookery books. But when I want to cook a recipe, I want to see a picture. And I want it to be.
But I also think that's the thing with Sabrina, in that she did do her apprenticeship. If you think that, really, from the age of six, she has been cooking. So I do believe that we all need to spend a certain amount of time. And yes, techniques are important, but I
boil in a bag recipe is part of the apprenticeship.
She was sick. She was sick, and then she, of course, she got her grandmother and her mother out of the kitchen and let me loose, and look what happened. So there was no more boil in the bag fish.
Well, boil in a bag is a friend of mine is distinguished when she was a very young bride, and setting up, learning kitchen, that an oven-ready chicken that her husband comes home, oh, I'm cooking a chicken, and wonder, strange smell for roast chicken. So oven-ready chicken, she took literally and put it in the oven, complete with wrapper, giblets inside.
Oh, dear.
Glad I wasn't cleaning up that oven.
Oven-ready chicken, perhaps, is not quite what it says. So did you complain to the Advertising Standards Authority and the Consumer Council or whatever? This is completely misleading. It's not oven-ready at all.
Do you know what I've always struggled with, and I've kind of got it now, but every time I saw a recipe that included pomegranates, my heart would just sink, because getting all of the, you know, I could never get that. I could never figure it out until I came to Dubai, because here everybody knows that they're all experts on how to remove the seeds from the pomegranate, and I finally learned how to do it, so thank you, Dubai, for that.
And they look, they really do look like jewels in food.
Oh, yes, they
are.
Do.
They're so beautiful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also so good for you, so full of antioxidants. Yeah. Really, really good for you.
And it's this time of the year. I mean, the season is slowly is going to end quite soon. But now is the time of the year, guys. If you haven't had your pomegranates, you better get them now.
But again, going back to her book with the recipes, you know, she talks about sumac and she talks about za'atar and she talks, get you to use all these things. So very user-friendly, and things that most of us have come across now living here in the Middle East.
Yes.
But, you know, even things that have challenged you. So, for example, one of my go-to recipes would be a lemon drizzle cake. Mm-hmm. And she has changed it, and it's an almond and citrus drizzle loaf. And I'm looking forward to doing that. But for me, it was, you know, Mary Berry and Nigella Lawson.
Oh, yes.
But I'm now going to try this one.
Yes, so of course.
It's encouraging you to be adventurous and not be stuck.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, folks, we've just had news that we're being cut short, that we're coming to an end at 12 o'clock today, so a whole pile of stuff that we were going to talk about, because we are going live or outside broadcasts or somewhere else. Esther, do you have quiz winners for me before we...
Well, I'm just crushed that we're not going to be discussing more on Peter Frankopan and
exactly.
the roots.
Oh,
yes.
I think you'll have to save him, as it's too good to let that go to
Maybe
waste.
We should do that.
We'll have to. We will have to just beg Chris to squeeze that into another show, because it is amazing, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness!
We're just waiting
yes.
at the moment for the right buttons to be pushed so that we can give you some winners for our quiz questions. But in the meantime, what I'm going to do is just tell you somebody that we haven't discussed, but it's involved with our cooking strand, is Nisha Katona. She has got a couple of session with us this year on the 3rd of March at 1 p.m. It's called Pimp My Rice, and it's lunch with Nisha Katona. If you don't know anything about Pimp My Rice, look it up. It's really great. She believes in giving us Indian cooking with three ingredients kind of thing, so it like really simplifies it. So that would be an interesting session to be involved in. I'm looking at Esther. Has she got us some quiz answers?
We are just about there. Do we have one for the Persia question, Esther?
There we go.
Oh, yes. Yep. There we go. Right, so Nadia Hussein, obviously, was she singing, dancing, or baking? She was baking, of course, and I think everybody got that right just about. But coming out of the electronic hat is Faika. So well done. Sessions to tickets for that session coming your way. And Perche, of course, is now Iram. And the lucky winner there is Dilip. So congratulations both. And thank you today to Everett Sharmila, to Tiki, to Julie from Penny and Me, your hosts, and of course to Esther for keeping us on track on the control desk. So we'll be back again next week, same time, and I hope for our usual 3 hours. So until then, farewell from Talking of Books.